We're still talking about that trip to St. John's in Newfoundland from Halifax, Nova Scotia, and the Lady Rodney. Now, if I thought that the Princess Helene had bounced around in the Bay of Fundy, that was because she was going from port to starboard all the time and seemed to be keeling over one way and the other. But it was a really rough night when we took off and took out from Halifax. And as we're going out in the blackness, and there isn't a light to be seen anywhere, in the captain's quarters where I was at that particular moment, he was signaling me to listen to the radio. And over the radio came Lord Haha's voice. He was that Englishman who spoke over the radio from Germany in good English, or he may have been German with an English accent, I don't recall. But he was saying, "Oh, the Lady Rodney, so you've taken off from Halifax tonight. Oh, yes, we've got vessel, we've got submarines looking for you." Well, I think my ears started to stand up on the top of my head when I heard this, because I thought, how in the Sam Hill would he know that we had taken off? But apparently very little was going on in the Atlantic was not known to the German people or German officials. Well, anyway,
the U-boats were keeping a pretty good eye.
So I was in charge of officer in charge of the ship insofar as the troops were concerned. Not in charge of the troops themselves, but I was a sort of the OC between the troops and the ship personnel. So I said, "Well, you know, 8 o'clock now, we've got to get that shift changed over on the decks." And one of the gunnery officers, there were three of them on the ship, because there was only one gun on the stern, he says, "I'll never understand why those people in Ottawa want to put the troops up there in the deck to watch out for submarines." I said, "I know, because they wouldn't be able to see anything tonight." And he said, "I don't think they know what a submarine looked like anyway." So I got a hold of the officer in charge, and I said, "What about the personnel? Shouldn't they be moving around?" And he said, "Well, I think they're still up on the decks." And I said, "Well, let's go and find out what they're doing up there." Well, it was obvious that those poor devils were seasick. Were they seasick? Not one of them was standing up. They were all lying on the deck. They had all been sick. And it was a case of getting them on their feet and sending them down into the forward part of the vessel where all the bunks were. So I said to the sergeant major, "Let's go down and see what's going on down there." So we go down into the forward hatch. Holy suffering succotash. These bunks were up about five in height. And they're all lying there, bemoaning the fact that they were seasick, and I think if the vessel had gone down, none of them would have really cared. Well, we had to haul them out of their bunks, and everybody's rushing over to buckets and relieving themselves, and strangely enough, it didn't bother me one bit. I've never been seasick. And yet I had to put my back against the wall because the ship was bouncing around so much, I didn't want to be thrown onto the deck. So we get the personnel up, and I can really just sympathize with that gunnery officer. They were just simply stupid. And all for some guy in Ottawa to say, to put these people up there in the deck looking out for a submarine, because they wouldn't have been any good if they had seen one. Anyway, we get to Newfoundland the next day, and they recovered a little by then. And they go off, and then we spend the day there and we're bringing some more troops back, and then I go back with the same vessel to Halifax.
Must be sometime in the winter, and that would maybe be the reason why there's such rough weather.
Oh no, it can get rough down there at any time, but this was in the winter time, yes.
I see.
No, I'm sorry, it wasn't, because we went, it was in the fall again, it was in the fall. Well, the weather wasn't that, the climate
fall
wasn't
of,
that bad. First time I was ever in, we went to the officer's mess, which was in Winter Home, like they called it in St. John's, Newfoundland. And I never realized that rum could be so cheap in my life.
Would this be would be the fall of 43 then? You'd be nearing.
No, it could have been the fall of 43 or the spring. No, I think it was the spring of 44.
Okay.
I'm sorry, the fall of 44. It was the fall of 44.
But then.
Another responsibility that we got into down there, and I say we, I wasn't the only one involved in movement control by any means. The French troops from St. Pierre Miquelon, they would come in to join the French foreign troops, and they would get off vessels, either via St. John's or Newfoundland, and came over in the Rodney. And every one of them had at least two and sometimes three kit bags that contained not even a toothbrush. Those kit bags were all loaded with booze of every description, beautiful brandies and beautiful wines and hard liquor. And they had been told of the value of this stuff when they got to Canada. So they'd get off their ship with this pile of stuff and try to sell it as quickly as they could, and they didn't have much trouble selling it. And they were getting rather fancy prices for it, too. So they were making money on the war.
It was about 6 weeks that you actually were in the duty of the OC of this ship, the Lady Rodney?
Oh, no, I was only one. I was the Princess Helene. I was OC ship there. That was quite a time. I was on that for at least 2 months. But I was still stationed in Halifax, and my wife was living in Halifax, and I was living in St. John, living in a rooming house, a little room, and every morning I had to be down there at 5 o'clock to get on the vessel and make sure she was lined up. And the reason they got so particular about keeping everybody's name was one of the ferries, going over to from Sydney, Nova Scotia, to Newfoundland, the other coast, I can't remember the name of the place, had been sunk by a submarine. And they didn't even know who was on board, because they hadn't kept any records.
When did that happen?
That happened in about 1941 sometime.
Oh, I see.
So that made them very particular. They finally got some brains in their heads and kept the list of everybody who was registered on the ship. Who went on the ship, the passenger.
So you stayed in Halifax then until, was it about June 1944?
No, until January 45.
January, okay. Yeah. January of 1945.
And then I decided, we had actually written letters to the Brigadier in Ottawa, asking for permission to get overseas. And I remember seeing a letter in reply that he'd sent to the OC in Halifax, saying these two officers, it was Chip Collins and myself, these two officers will remain in my command until I have no further use for them. Which was just plain stupid. I mean, we'd been down here for a year and a half and we should have been sent overseas, but oh no, there was all sorts of other guys who could have done the same darn job we were doing. But anyway, we said, all right, we're going to switch over to the infantry and go to Vernon, British Columbia, take the battle drill course. So all of a sudden, RCASC, we became CIA infantry officers. Went out to Vernon. And this battle drill course out there wasn't any joke. This was something that when you went out on maneuvers, there were machine guns going over your head, and if you didn't duck, you damn well were hit. So you darn well went on your knees or on your stomachs in many cases to make sure you get through barbed wire entanglements and all the rest of it. And that is where I've never run so much in my life, was in Vernon. Now, of course, nothing's on the flat. You're either going uphill or downhill. But we would run with a machine gun on our shoulders and run for 20 miles. And strangely enough, when we get back at night, think there was nothing wrong with it. Here again, I managed to wrangle out some rules and regulations, and my wife came out and joined us. And there were three of us, three old buddies. And we went to into a motel, no, apartments downtown in Vernon. And incidentally, I've tried to find those apartments now and I can't. They've all disappeared. But they were very comfortable apartments built by a man who was in the hardware business. And he reserved them strictly for Army personnel, because somehow or other in the First World War he had had difficulty finding accommodation the same way. So this time he decided he was going to be a decent man and find accommodation for any officer personnel that wanted to live in an apartment in Vernon. Well, that was a place where you got your battle drill course and everything that you can think of with cannon and machine guns and rifles and pistols and everything else. And I left Vernon 183 pounds of nothing but muscle and bone. I could run 20, 25 miles and it didn't bother me. I get back out of Vernon and I go down to DeBert to go overseas. We go to the embarkation camp in DeBert. DeBert, Nova Scotia. And they said, railroad experience, movement control. Bang! They put me back in the movement control. And I said, yeah, but I'm... You couldn't talk sense to some people in the Army in those days. So anyway, I sit in DeBert for a few months, and then I'm sent overseas. By this time, the ruddy war is over. You know, the war was over sometime. When the hell was it over? Anyway... It was over when we were. It was over when we were in DeBert, and I can remember us going into Halifax because there'd been riots down there, the troops having a ball, because of the fact that the war was over. And I can't blame them for having a ball for that reason. And we get sent overseas on the Empress of Scotland. Empress of Scotland, yeah, that's right. And we get to Liverpool, we can't even get into the dock at Liverpool, so we have to sit outside for a couple of days. No submarines around there to worry about.
Yeah. What kind of ship did you travel on? I'm sorry, I didn't pick that up.
Empress of Scotland.
What kind of ship was it?
Oh, it was a big troop ship. And you'd have your little bunk to sleep in, and it wasn't very comfortable, but then...
A Liberty ship?
Oh, no. These are old pasture ships that had been converted into, instead of two people to a room, they'd have 22 people to a room.
Uh-huh.
And all they were made into ships that could take a lot of personnel on board with bunks rather than beds. But then when I get over there, they send us off to Storrington. We get to the camp at Storrington and it's raining. And we're in a tent. And none of us, the three buddies, Chip Collins, myself, and Frank Craig, knew what the devil was going on. We were over there and we wondered what Sam Hill was, what were we there for? The war's over, why weren't we at home? And Frank was never a person to swear. I'd never heard him using foul language at all. But Collins and I were out in this rain, and we've come down. We're reaching a stage we're not even talking to each other. We're so darn mad at everything. We're so disappointed, I suppose. We lift the flap from the tent, and we walk in, and here's Frank lying in his bunk, on his cot. There are three cots there. And he's saying, "Damn this life! Damn this life! Damn this life!" And it struck Collins, Ship Collins, and I so funny. The two of us sat down in our bunks and started to laugh. And very soon, the three of us were in absolute ecstasy. We were laughing so much that the tears were coming down our cheeks. And then I looked at the other two after we got our breaths. I said, "That's the only way we'd ever win a war." You and I, as we can see the humor in living and all these stupid things that are taking place, we can still see something funny about it. Then I stayed there until April. They sent me back on movement control. This time I'm sending troops back home to Canada. Just the very reverse of what I was doing before. I should never have told them I was in the Army, in the railroad.
April of 1945?
I got back here in April of 45. Got back on a Friday afternoon. And I was in my office on Monday morning. I didn't even take any time off. I was glad to be back at my office.
And so that was it, basically, for your duties during the wartime?
Yes, part of the duties. You know, they sent us over to France. I don't know what for, because the war was over. We went to Paris and we went through DeBert and saw the mess that they'd made in DeBert.
DeBert? In France?
not divert. Where were the Canadian troops? What was this?
Dunkirk.
Yeah, divert. You're getting me confused tonight. We went through Dunkirk, and when I saw the mess to be made there, then we went to Paris, and wasn't much damage there because those French people had given up so darned early in the fighting. But I had a job, and all of the darn. I went to Easy Group in England, down near Whitby. And we had to bring the troops in to see that they were happy and satisfied, and that they had certain things to do to keep them amused before they were put on trains to be sent home, and then on ships. And I got involved in all that stuff.
Also, the big part, the princess.
Oh, yes. My wife just reminded me something. It was shortly after I got to England. I was sitting in the mess, and the telephone rang, and somebody answered it and said, oh yes, thank you very much. So they came over out and spoke in a loud voice and said, any five officers want to go to a party tomorrow night? Well, there were only five officers there because it was a weekend, and everybody with any money had gone off to London. And I had gone to London a couple of weeks before that, and I had all of 25, I had all of a shilling in my pocket, so I wasn't going anywhere. However, the five of us got together, and he said, well, what this is all about is a party at this home, which is not a home, it's a fortified castle, and the princess Elizabeth, who's now Queen Elizabeth, will be there. So we were very impressed, and we get into a vehicle, and we go over to this house, and knock on the door, and here's a man, and a bib and tucker meets us, and we thought he was the butler with his dinner jacket on. That turns out to be Peter, the girl's who's having the party, her brother. Well, he's a very nice person, and we sit around, and they have big tents outside on the lawn. This home was a gorgeous, fantastically gorgeous old castle with walls outside that had fallen down through the centuries, that were about 10 feet thick. Well, there was music, and there was bar, and there was food, and everything else, and we certainly didn't really know what we were supposed to be doing there, but we went around and met as many people as we could, and thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. Well, then the Duke of Norfolk came in with his car, and he had picked up the princess in his car. Well, the darn car was about 50 feet long. It was a huge thing. Came in the driveway, and the princess came out, and she was absolutely gorgeous. I never thought she could be that pretty. And I had been asked if I would introduce the other four officers, my companion officers, to the princess. Well, I'm not an individual who's been tongue-tied in my life. But I actually reached the stage that I stumbled over everybody's name and could hardly do the job properly. Just looking at her, she was so gorgeous. And then dancing with her, she said, my, there are a lot of Canadians here tonight. I seem to be dancing with a Canadian all the time. We were just making sure we were doing that. It was a fantastic party, and she was a delightful girl. And that was a wonderful evening.
So after that, your service, you remained in the armed forces anyway?
No. When I left, got home on the 20th, it was in April of 1946. I took my discharge right away, and I never went back near them. And I think that's what happened to most people, you know. They had enough of it. I had 5.5 years, and it was just... Mm-hmm.
So that was it as far as the military. You stayed right out of it. After April of 46, did you say?
Yes, April of 46.
So what had happened was after the war ended in the spring of 45, you had been sent overseas
after the war was over.
Yeah.
And then came back and after the war was over.
But
I had...
That was about a year you spent overseas after the war, didn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it was... just short of a year. But you know, when I got back, the thing that annoyed me, I had was working for the Pennsylvania Railroad, and here I'd been away away from the company for 5.5 years, and anybody in Canada who's left their job found that their pension was carried on. You know, if you'd have been working for the Canadian Pacific, I would have been given credit for those 5.5 years, as everybody did. But the Pennsylvania Railroad said, oh, there's only two of you who are not in the American, you're only two in the Canadian forces, so we won't pay that. I lost 5.5 years of pension from the Pennsylvania Railroad, and another chap who joined the Canadian, was in the Canadian Army, did the same thing. And that's two people out of about 80,000. I thought that was pretty rotten treatment.
So did you stay with them?
Oh, I stayed with them, no, not... I stayed with them until 1952, then I left them.
Well, anyway, thank you very much for the interview. Is there anything else that you can remember offhand that you might that you haven't?
Well, I don't find this very interesting as a story. I don't know why you'd want to put it on tape, because frankly, it's kind of a dull thing. But no, there were many interesting things that happened, and a lot of it was just because you get bored and you don't want to do the same thing all the time. But I can remember walking down the docks in Halifax. You know, you'd have periods there where there was no ship, no train, no nothing. It'd be days go by, you really had nothing to do. And a couple of us would just start walking along the docks, and we'd go into the fish houses and get onto the boats. And it was fascinating to see the activity that was taking place on the waterfront down there in the city of Halifax. And then once in a while, we'd find enough bucks between us to take our wives up to one of the decent restaurants or hotels in Halifax. But eating out down there was a real chore, because there were Green Lantern, what was it, the Green Lantern?
Yes.
Green Lantern when we'd go. And if you went for a meal there, you had to line up. And you couldn't complain, because the owner would say, look, I'm more trouble getting staff than customers. If you don't like it, leave. And there's nothing you could do about it. You just had to wait in line. And we never were able to, well, we did finally find a place that we had ourselves down there and shared with Muriel's brother, and who was in the artillery, and his wife. And we got that house over in Dartmouth, and that was quite good, because here we are with, we've got our own little stove and everything else, so we could do our own cooking. But when we were living in, we had to eat outside, that was really chaos. Now, if I'd stayed in barracks as an individual without my wife, that would have been different. I would have had barrack food all the time. And I tried that. I didn't find it very exciting in Halifax.
Well, I think this pretty well ends the interview. I don't think there's...
Well, I hope you've got some value from it.
I've
enjoyed doing it, I can tell you that, my dear friend, my dear namesake.
Well, thank you very much, Lieutenant Gray.
A pleasure.